This is Audible.
Coming Home, a Western Short, written and narrated by J.C. Hulsey. Chapter 1. The awful war was finally over and I was going home. At least I hoped I still had a home. I didn't leave on very good terms. Me heading north, and my three brothers going south. Paul said he just couldn't understand how a son of his could turn against his family like that. I tried to explain my convictions, but Paul didn't want to listen, so I climbed up on my horse and pointed him north. I got about 100 yards out, then I stopped, turned in the saddle, and said goodbye to the home I had known for all of my 17 years. While I was gone, I saw some terrifying sights. I was a good soldier, and it wasn't long till I was promoted to the rank of lieutenant. I found it was a lot harder being in charge than it was following orders. I still wonder how many young men I ordered into battle and them not come back. I guess those memories will be with me for a long time. But it's over now. At least the fighting that I endured these past years is over. I can only hope that I'll be welcome at home. When I left, everybody was pretty upset. In fact, I can still hear Paul telling me how disappointed he was in me. "After all," he shouted, "you was born in the South, so you should feel obligated to serve the South alongside your brothers." I tried to explain my feelings, but Paul wouldn't listen. He closed his mind to anything I tried to say, the same way he had in the past when I did something or said something he didn't agree with. My brothers were just small imitations of Paul. They did exactly what he told them to do without ever questioning the right or wrong of it. Anyway, that's in the past. Maybe now, after all these years, things will be different. I rode to the top of the rise and stopped. I looked down at the old home place, the place I'd been born, the place I grew up, the youngest of four boys. Ma had died giving birth to me, and I sometimes felt Paul blame me for her death, the way he'd look at me with that look he had whenever things didn't go to suit him. One good thing about Paul, he didn't believe in using the strap. However, sometimes I think it would have been easier to endure that than the feeling of being an outcast in your own family. And it wasn't only Paul that made me feel that way. My brothers would treat me the same way. In fact, I never really felt like I was part of the family. My brothers were like peas in a pod. They did everything together and never invited me to be a part of whatever they were doing. One thing about feeling like an outsider, it makes you tough. It makes you not want to trust or feel anything because you don't want to be disappointed. Chapter 2. That became a sort of dilemma for me because of Dolores. Dolores McKinney was the daughter of Dennis McKinney, our neighbors. I met her on my 16th birthday when I was swimming in that little creek that separated our property. I'd shucked all my clothes and was enjoying the feel of the cool, clear, shallow water as it rushed over my bare skin. It was barely deep enough to cover my most private parts. I was relaxing with my eyes closed, and the next thing I knew, someone or something was pushing my head under the water. I fought as best I could to keep from drowning. When I was turned loose, I came up, sputtering and a-cussing, saying words that Pastor Brown definitely would not approve of. Getting to my feet, I wiped the water from my eyes, and there before me was a beautiful blonde-haired girl laughing hysterically and clapping her hands. I suddenly realized my lack of clothing and dropped back down into the shallow water, which, as I said, barely covered me. "What's the meaning?" I shouted. "You almost drowned me." "Ah, shuck," she snorted. "You got to be under a lot longer than that to drown. What are you doing on our property anyway?" "What are you talking about?" I asked, perplexed. "This creek happens to be on our property." "Nope," she said confidently. "This part of the creek is our property. See how the creek kind of turns and meanders over that direction and then back the other way? This is McKinney property." "Well, whoever's property it is, would you mind turning around so I can get out and get dressed?" "I don't know why you're so shy. I done seen everything you got. Ain't nothing to brag about, neither." She laughed, turned, and walked onto the bank. I was pretty upset with myself, but as soon as she turned her back, I was skedaddling out of there and dressing as fast as I could. "Okay," I shouted. "I'm dressed. You can turn around." When she turned and I got a real good look at her, my mouth fell open. I'd never seen such beauty. Her blonde hair fell to her shoulders. Her sky blue eyes were wide as if searching for something. Their color seemed to change from a sky blue to a light green as she spoke. "You need to close your mouth. You're going to catch a bunch of flies," she said, stifling a giggle. "My name's Dolores McKinney. What's yours?" I closed my mouth, feeling my face flush red. I'm Jeremiah Hawkins. That was the beginning of a relationship that was the one thing that kept me sane. We met almost every day at that little creek. We shared our feelings, we shared our dreams, and a few kisses were also shared. And on one cloudy day, we shared something more. For a while, I thought everything was going to be all right. Then on April the 12th, 1861, the United States became embroiled in a civil war. It was one of the most devastating things to ever happen to this country. Of course, with Paul egging them on, my three brothers signed up to fight with the Southern cause. When Paul looked at me with those cold, calculating gray eyes and asked, "Well, kid, what are you going to do?" I couldn't, even if I wanted to, do as he had convinced my brothers to do. I felt completely different about the reasons for the war, and I felt compelled to follow my heart and fight for the Union. I don't think I'd ever seen this side of Paul. Those cold, calculating gray eyes turned almost black as he tried to control his temper. "If you do this," he proclaimed, "you ain't no son of mine. You'll be the same as dead in my eyes." The thought that ran through my mind at that moment was, "I ain't never been your son in all the years I've been alive." Of course, I didn't say it out loud. I knew it was no use to continue to try and explain my feelings, so I turned and walked away. The next day, I packed what few belongings I owned, saddled my horse, and rode away. I stopped by Dolores's home, and she was almost as bad as Paul, trying to convince me to follow my brothers. "If you don't want to fight for the South, then don't fight at all. Your pa's going to need your help at home with your brothers gone. And what about you and me? I thought I was special to you. I thought you felt the same about me. I thought we might even get married someday." "I do think you're special. You're what's kept me going this past year. Without you, I don't think I could have survived. And marrying has been on my mind for some time now. But you know, and I know with this war looming over us, we could never live in peace until it's over and done with. Please tell me you'll wait until I return. I'll ask you to marry me then." "I can't make that promise. Why, you might not come back at all, and where would that leave me? I ain't going to wind up being an old maid." I realized at that moment that I was indeed alone in this world. In all the times that I had spent with this woman, I'd never felt as alone as at this very moment. I didn't say anything to her remark about me not coming back. I put my hat back on my head, turned, walked to my horse, mounted up, and took off. Chapter 3. I could go into a lot of details about the war, but I'm trying real hard to put it out of my mind and behind me. But even though that's what I want to do, I can't seem to do it. The war was one of the worst things that ever happened in my life. The first day on the battlefield is one I'll never forget. I thought being mistreated at home was tough, but all the things I'd had to endure on that fateful day was beyond description. Most of the soldiers on both sides didn't have uniforms, and there was really no way to distinguish between the blue and the gray. All we had to go by was the direction they were coming from, and then when they got close enough for hand-to-hand combat, there was no way to tell who was who. Was that man I just killed the enemy, or one of my fellow soldiers? When it was over, the lieutenant in charge, one wearing a blue uniform, declared our side the winner. I stood, looking across the field, once a field of wheat now littered with bodies. Many were only injured, and the moans and cries from those men almost broke my heart. The question that kept running through my head was, did I do the right thing, joining up to kill other human beings? And another question was, what are we, fathers, brothers, and cousins, doing fighting and killing or maiming one another? Is this something that couldn't be settled peacefully? Me and the few survivors were ordered to reconnoiter about 2 miles south of where we were. I personally was glad to leave this place of death. The next day we were issued uniforms, blue uniforms. Some were new, but most were used, faded almost to a gray color. If we had a hard time knowing who to fight before, these uniforms ain't going to make much difference. That night a major had a meeting and informed us of the upcoming battles. He also explained how we could tell the difference between the enemy and one of our own. "Get to know each man in the unit you're assigned to. That way if you come up on someone you don't recognize, it will more than likely be the enemy." Each battle after that didn't get any easier than that first battle. Each time afterward I would stand and look at the waste of human lives laying there in the field. How I longed to be back home, even with the way my pa felt about me, and to be with Dolores. Oh, how I wish we had parted on better terms. I miss her so much. I watch as some of the men write and receive letters from their homes and their sweethearts, and it breaks my heart because I'm not getting any. The day I was promoted was, in my opinion, just like all the other days, full of screaming voices and blood covering the ground. After that particular battle, the new captain called me over to where he was lying wounded on a cot. "Private Hawkins," he stated, then hesitated, coughing blood. "Hawkins, as you can see, I'm checking out. But before I go, I'm putting you in charge."
But, sir," I began.
"Don't interrupt. I ain't got enough time to argue. I'm giving you a battlefield commission. That's so the men will recognize you're in charge. I've been watching you, and you're the logical choice. You're a barn leader. Here, these are my old bars. Pin 'em on, and do a good job." I took the gold bars from his shaking hand, stood to attention, and saluted. He barely raised his hand to return the salute, and then his eyes went blank as the breath left his body. So now, after all those long, heart-wrenching months and days, I'm on my way home. As I sit there astride my horse in my faded blue uniform, looking down at the old home place, I remove my hat, mop my forehead with my bandana, place my hat back on my head. I took a deep breath, kneed my horse, and we started down the small hill. I was almost to the house when out of the corner of my eye I spotted a stooped old man plowing in the field. I pulled up and watched as he shook the reins and slapped the horse, following the furrows in a methodical way. He looked up and saw me. He pulled on the reins, stopping the horse and standing up as straight as he could. He watched, holding his hand over his eyes to block out the sun. He removed the leather reins from around his shoulders and proceeded to walk toward me. As he drew closer, I could see his face turn from a look of excitement to a frown when he recognized me. He kept walking till he was about 5 feet from me.
"That faded uniform looked gray. I thought you was Albert." "You ain't. What are you doing here?"
he asked bluntly. "I thought I'd come home," I told him, starting to dismount.
"Ain't no need for you to get off your horse. You ain't welcome here. If you remember what I told you when you left, this ain't your home no more. You ain't my son. So I reckon you better get on out of here and don't come back."
"I remember, but I thought even if you don't want to see me, maybe Albert or Clyde or Bruce would like to see me. I sure would like to see them."
"Clyde and Bruce are dead, probably killed by one of your bullets. Albert ain't showed up yet. Ain't really expecting to neither."
I could see that nothing had changed with Paul. He was still as hard and cold as he ever was, and maybe even more so now that he had lost probably all four of his sons. I knew there was no way to convince him that I wasn't responsible for the death of my brothers, so I turned my horse and left again. I stopped, turned in my saddle. "Can you tell me if Dolores McKinney's still around?" He spit before he answered. His face scrunched up as if he had bitten into a sour pickle.
"Yeah, she's still around, but she don't want nothing to do with the likes of you. I'd recommend you stay away from her place, or you might wind up shot by her paw."
I turned back and rode away toward the McKinney place. I wondered why Mr. McKinney would want to shoot me. He and I had always gotten along very well. In fact, he had invited me for dinner on more than one occasion. Well, I reckon I'll find out. Chapter 4. When I came in sight of the McKinney home, it was almost a repeat of the scene with Paul plowing. There was Mr. McKinney out in the field walking behind a brown mule. As I had at home, I stopped and watched. When he saw me, he raised his hand and waved. I waved back and proceeded to the house. As I got closer, I noticed a small child looked to be around 3 years old playing inside the white picket fence. I stopped, dismounted, and walked to the gate. Just then the door flew open and there she was. I was as mesmerized as the first time I laid eyes on her. She stopped, opened her mouth as if to speak, yet no sound came out. Remembering the words that she had said to me that day so long ago, I said, "Better close your mouth. You're going to catch a bunch of flies." Her mouth closed and she rushed to the child and picked it up. "What are you doing here?" she asked hastily. "I figured you was dead. Ain't heard a word from you all the time you was gone. Didn't figure you wanted to hear from me after what you said when I left, but I've carried you with me every step of the journey. I wanted to write many times, yet as I said, I didn't think you wanted to hear from me." "Oh, Jerry, I was so foolish. I was a foolish child. I loved you so much, but my stupid pride wouldn't let me admit it. I've missed you so much."
The child in her arms started fussing.
Mama, I'm hungry.
Something caused my brain to kick into gear. Is this her child? Is this my child? I looked closer at him. I could see now that the child was a boy. I opened the gate and walked to her side. His name is Jeremiah, she stated plainly. Yes, he's your son. Will you be his daddy? I stood there, my mouth trying to catch flies. How? When? I mean, we only... Yes, and that's when it happened. I wanted so much to tell you, but I didn't know how to get in touch with you. And your pa wasn't any help at all. He flat out told me that all his sons were dead. But none of that matters now. You're home. I know it's kind of backwards, but will you marry me and be a daddy to this boy? Of course I'll marry you. And yes, I'll be a daddy to this young Jeremiah. Chapter 4. When I came in sight of the McKinney home, it was almost a repeat of the scene with Paul plowing. There was Mr. McKinney out in the field walking behind a brown mule. As I had at home, I stopped and watched. When he saw me, he raised his hand and waved. I waved back and proceeded to the house. As I got closer, I noticed a small child looked to be around 3 years old playing inside the white picket fence. I stopped, dismounted, and walked to the gate. Just then the door flew open and there she was. I was as mesmerized as the first time I laid eyes on her. She stopped, opened her mouth as if to speak, yet no sound came out. Remembering the words that she had said to me that day so long ago, I said, "Better close your mouth. You're going to catch a bunch of flies." Her mouth closed and she rushed to the child and picked it up. "What are you doing here?" she asked hastily. "I figured you was dead. Ain't heard a word from you all the time you was gone. Didn't figure you wanted to hear from me after what you said when I left, but I've carried you with me every step of the journey. I wanted to write many times, yet as I said, I didn't think you wanted to hear from me." "Oh, Jerry, I was so foolish. I was a foolish child. I loved you so much, but my stupid pride wouldn't let me admit it. I've missed you so much." The child in her arms started fussing.
"Mama, I'm hungry."
Something caused my brain to kick into gear. Is this her child? Is this my child? I looked closer at him. I could see now that the child was a boy. I opened the gate and walked to her side. "His name is Jeremiah," she stated plainly. "Yes, he's your son. Will you be his daddy?" I stood there, my mouth trying to catch flies. How? When? I mean, we only... Yes, and that's when it happened. I wanted so much to tell you, but I didn't know how to get in touch with you. And your pa wasn't any help at all. He flat out told me that all his sons were dead. But none of that matters now. You're home. I know it's kind of backwards, but will you marry me and be a daddy to this boy? Of course I'll marry you. And yes, I'll be a daddy to this young Jeremiah. Epilogue. Jerry and his family lived on the McKinney place, and when Mr. McKinney passed on, Jerry took over the running of the farm. Jerry's pa never did come around, and Jerry learned he had died in his sleep. Jerry's brother Albert never returned from the war, so it was assumed he was dead. Even though Jerry's pa counted him as being dead, the county didn't see it that way. Jerry, being the only living relative, inherited the Hawkins place, his old home place. He combined the two properties and turned them into one of the largest cattle ranches in the county. Jerry and Dolores had three more children, and even though parents claim they don't have favorites, they seem to favor Jeremiah Jr. You've been listening to Coming Home, a Western Short, written and narrated by J.C. Hulsey. Copyright 2016 by J.C. Hulsey. Audio copyright 2016 by Outlaws Publishing, LLC.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.